Baba Punjabi Hari. Pichan Palapa Giravarir Hari Pichan Palapa Giravarir Hari Yashoda Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Parvajakachara Sotera Satashri, Shimit Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Chari, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Samavikti Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Guranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sakadeva Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhanamani Namaste Saraswati Gaur Vana Bichwani Nivisesha Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta. Is the speaker loud enough? People are okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 15. Ataksara Shravalena Pade Grihito. Grahena yuta patir ambuja hasta arta. Aheda mari purushakilam lokanata. Tirthir shava shravana mangala namadeya. Antaksara Shirabalena Pade Grihito. Grahena Yuta Patirambuja Hastarta. Ahedam Adi Purushakila Lokanata. Tirtha Shrava Shravana Mangala Namadeya. Antaksara Shuru Balena Pade Grihito. Grahena Yuta Patirambuja. Grahena Yuta Patirambuja Hasta Arta. Ahiram Adi Purusha Kila Lokanata. Tirtha Shrava Shravana Mangala Namadeya. Others. Vaishnavis. Antasarasi, within the river, Urubalena, by superior strength, Pade, leg, Grahita, being taken up, Grahena, by the crocodile, Yutapati, of the leader of the elephants, Ambujahasta, with the lotus flower in the hand, Artha, greatly aggrieved, Aha, addressed, Idam, like this, Adi Purusha, the original enjoyer, Akila Lokanata, the Lord of the universe, Tirtha Shrava, as famous as a place of pilgrimage, Shravana Mangala, all good simply by hearing the name, Namadeya, whose holy name is worth chanting. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The leader of the elephants, whose leg was attacked in a river by a crocodile of superior strength, was much aggrieved. Taking a lotus flower in his trunk, he addressed the Lord, saying, O original enjoyer, Lord of the universe, O deliverer, famous as a place of pilgrimage, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy to be chanted. Report. The history of delivering the leader of the elephants, whose leg was attacked in the river by the superior strength of a crocodile, is described in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Since the Lord is absolute knowledge, there is no difference between his holy name and the personality of Godhead. The leader of the elephants was much distressed when he was attacked by the crocodile. Although the elephant is always stronger than the crocodile, the latter is stronger than the elephant when it is in the water. And because the elephant was a great devotee of the Lord in his previous birth, he was able to chant the holy name of the Lord by dint of his past good deeds. Every living entity is always distressed in this material world because this place is such that at every step one has to meet with some kind of distress. But one who is supported by his past good deeds engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:16. Those who are supported by impious acts cannot be engaged in devotional service to the Lord, even though they are distressed. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:15. The personality of Gadadhari appeared at once on the back of his eternal bear, Garuda, and delivered the elephant. The elephant was conscious of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. He addressed the Lord as Adi Purusha, or the original enjoyer. Both the Lord and the living being are conscious and are therefore enjoyers. But the Lord is the original enjoyer because he is the creator of everything. In a family, both the father and sons are undoubtedly enjoyers, but the father is the original enjoyer and the sons are subsequent enjoyers. A pure devotee knows well that everything in the universe is the property of the Lord, and the living entity can enjoy a thing as ordained by the Lord. A living being cannot even touch a thing which is not allotted to him. The idea of the original enjoyer is explained very nicely in the Upanishad. One who knows the difference between the Lord and himself never accepts anything without offering it first to the Lord. The elephant addressed the Lord as Akila Lokanata, or the Lord of the universe, who is therefore the Lord of the elephant also. The elephant, being a pure devotee of the Lord, specifically deserves to be saved from the attack of the crocodile. And because it is a promise of the Lord that his devotee will never be vanquished, it was quite befitting that the elephant called upon the Lord to protect him, and that the merciful Lord also at once responded. The Lord is the protector of everyone, but he is the first protector of one who acknowledges the superiority of the Lord instead of being so falsely proud as to deny the superiority of the Lord or to claim to be equal to him. He is ever superior. A pure devotee of the Lord knows this difference between the Lord and himself. Therefore, a pure devotee is given first preference because of his full dependence, whereas the person who denies the existence of the Lord and declares himself the Lord is called Asura, and as such is given protection by the strength of limited power subject to the sanction of the Lord. Since the Lord is superior to everyone, his perfection is also superior. No one can imagine it. The elephant addressed the Lord as Tirtha Shrava, or as famous as a place of pilgrimage. People go to places of pilgrimage in order to be delivered from the reactions of unknown sinful acts. But one can be freed from all sinful reactions simply by remembering his holy name. The Lord is therefore as good as a holy place of pilgrimage. One can be freed from all sinful reactions after reaching a place of pilgrimage, but one can have the same benefit at home or at any place simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. For a pure devotee, there is no need to go to the holy place of pilgrimage. He can be delivered from all sinful acts simply by remembering the Lord in earnestness. A pure devotee of the Lord never commits any sinful acts, but because the whole world is full of the sinful atmosphere, even a pure devotee may commit a sin unconsciously as a matter of course. One who commits sinful acts consciously cannot be worthy of being a devotee of the Lord. But a pure devotee who unconsciously does something sinful is certainly delivered by the Lord, because a pure devotee remembers the Lord always. The Lord's holy name is called Shravanamangala. This means that one receives everything auspicious simply by hearing the holy name. In another place in Srimad Bhagavatam, his holy name is described as Punya Shravana Kirtana. It is a pious act simply to chant or hear all about the Lord. The Lord descends on this earth and acts like others in connection with the activities of the world just to create subject matters for hearing about him. Otherwise, the Lord has nothing to do in this world, nor has he any obligation to do anything. He comes out of his own causeless mercy and acts as he desires. The Vedas and the Puranas are full of descriptions of his different activities, so that people in general may naturally be eager to hear and read about his activities. Generally, however, the modern fictions and novels of the world occupy a greater part of people's valuable time. Such literatures cannot do good to anyone. On the contrary, they agitate the young mind unnecessarily and increase the modes of passion and ignorance, leading to increasing bondage to the material conditions. The same aptitude for hearing and reading is better utilized in hearing and reading of the Lord's activities. This will give one all-around benefit. It is concluded, therefore, that the holy name of the Lord and topics in relation with him are always worth hearing, and therefore he is called here in this verse Namadeya, or one whose holy name is worth chanting. Om Gyana Timarandisha, Gananjana Salakaya, Chaksarun Mitamina, Tasma Shri Gurve Namaha, Vanchako Patri Vishcha, Kripa Sindhu Vyavicha, Patikano Pavane Bhiro Vaishadevi Namo Namaha. So this is a very wonderful pastime and very wonderful purport here, which is very, very packed with information and things to speak about, which I will not be able to cover all of it, I don't think. This pastime, as Prabhupada mentions, is covered in the eighth canto in much more detail. In fact, in chapters 2, 3, and 4 of the eighth canto, all are about the pastime of Gajendra and being saved by the Lord. And it's filled with meanings and lessons. It sounds like a simple thing, you know, elephants fighting with a crocodile, he calls out to Krishna, he gets saved, he goes, you know, no, but there's so much more involved and so many things, ideas there that we can relish. So I want to give a little overview of the pastime and this particular incarnation, who I guess is called Lord Hari, or the incarnation of Hari. He's called Narayan sometimes in the verses, but usually just Hari, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It also has a lot of different meanings. You might even say allegorical or parable type of meanings. And Prabhupada specifically talks in his purport about the four names by which Gajendra addresses Krishna. So talk a little bit about how those are applied within the pastime and how they're meaningful to us. So Gajendra, in his former lifetime, was King Indrajumna. And he was a very, very great king in South India. He was very renounced at the end of his life. He was a devotee, and he renounced everything, went to the forest to meditate and to serve Krishna, and he was meditating in silence. He had a vow of silence, actually. So he's there very silently meditating, almost probably unaware of the world around him, and Agastya Muni with his followers come, you know, great Agastya Muni, great Muni, sadhu, and the king ignores him, because he's deep in meditation. Reminds me a little bit about Maharaj Parikrit and Sringi and that type of thing, where he doesn't acknowledge him. And so Agastya Muni curses him. And he says, you're a very strong king, but you're very unintelligent. You don't know proper behavior. So you can be a big, strong, unintelligent, dumb elephant in your next life. And of course, there's always a little benediction along with these curses by these great saints. And so anyway, Indrajumna accepts the curse. Yeah, he's a devotee, so he doesn't even really try to protest that much. And he is able to remember the prayers that he had learned as a devotee in his next lifetime due to the mercy of the Lord. Now, it doesn't necessarily say he remembered everything about his past lifetime. That's not quite clear, but he certainly, at the end, his remembrances returned to him by Krishna. So he's the king of the elephants now. And he's actually a very good king, as, you know, animal kings go, they say. And everything was peaceful in his animal kingdom. All the animals got along really well. And, of course, he was extremely powerful. No one had more power than him. So he's playing in the water, as elephants do. And he was attacked by this, you know, very big, strong crocodile. And this crocodile, of course, is no ordinary crocodile. In his former life, he was a Gandharva. In fact, he was a king called King Huhu. So King Huhu one day was playing in the water, as probably with the ladies, as Gandharvas are wont to do. And anyway, in playing around, he wasn't paying attention or whatever, but he pulled the leg of Devala Muni, who was bathing in the river at that time. Now, he was another of these great sadhus, powerful Muni, and Devala cursed him to be a crocodile. You like to play around in the water? All right, be a crocodile. You can be in the water all you want. And but, you know, King Hu was very repentant, said, please, you know, anyway. He said, okay, your benediction will be, you will be benedicted to see the Lord when Gajendra is saved. So apparently he had some knowledge of the future. So anyway, there they are fighting. And they're both very, very strong. They're fighting for 1,000 years. It's a long time. I mean, I suppose it's the years of the demigods, but anyway, it's a long time. They're fighting in the water. And, of course, the elephant is very strong in the land, so he could have easily defeated the crocodile, but the crocodile is strong in the water. That's his natural habitat. So after, you know, a few hundred years, Gajendra starts becoming very fatigued. He can't eat. he's getting weaker and weaker. He says the crocodile was just, you know, doing fine. In fact, almost becoming stronger as he went along. His friends and family couldn't help him. They actually did. The other elephants came. They tried to see if they could pull him out, but they couldn't, and they couldn't certainly do anything about the crocodile because they weren't nearly as strong even as Gajendra. So eventually, what does he do? It says he contemplated the situation. He really couldn't defeat the crowd. There was no way out of this for him. But then he remembered the Lord. He remembered Krishna. He remembered Narayan. And he calls out in surrender to the Lord. And so, of course, Lord Hari, or actually Lord Narayan, comes on Garuda, his carrier. He hears his call. Actually, it says that the demigods were also watching all this, but they decided not to help him because he was calling out for Narayan, so they shouldn't get involved. You know, in other words, this was Narayan was his worshipful deity. So when when Gajendra sees the Lord coming, of course he's very, very, you know, excited. But he's so weak. I mean, what can he do? And he's stuck there, you know, held by the leg with his crocodile. So the only thing he could do is he looked around with his trunk. He pulls up a lotus flower and offers the lotus flower to Krishna, which was very pleasing to Krishna. And Narayan comes, he gets it down off of his carrier, Garuda, with his left hand. He pulls them both, because, you know, crocodile still latched onto his leg. So he pulls them both out of the water, onto the bank, and with his right hand, takes his Sudarshan chakra and cuts off the head of the crocodile. It's actually said it cuts his mouth off, but we assume his head goes with him, with the mouth. So he was killed, and he was saved. So Gajendra, it says, received Sarupya liberation. Sarupya liberation is one of the five types of liberation, which means having the same bodily forms as the Lord. So he goes back with Narayan and Garuda back to Vaikuntha, to the spiritual world. He's, you know, he had been a devotee in his past lifetime, and now he's completely, you know, by the touch of the Lord, he's completely free of all sins. He's completely purified and is able to go back to Godhead, go back to Vaikuntha. Now, what happens to the crocodile? Well, the crocodile, who had his head cut off, he gets, because he was killed by the Lord, he gets reinstated as a Gandharva. But then it says he went back to the spiritual world also. So he was also liberated. Both of them were. This is one of these where it all turns out well for everybody, although it sounds like a terrible situation. But, you know, they both became cursed as animals. They have this terrible fight. But Vishnu comes and he liberates both of them. So it's very, very nice. And, of course, there's always a parable or an allegory in many of these stories. I was trying to figure out the difference between a parable and allegory. I don't know. I couldn't quite figure it out. But a parable is a short story with a moral lesson. I guess that's what it is. Now, this isn't meant to be esoteric or hidden. This isn't, here's the hidden meaning that I'm going to disclose to you. No, it's quite obvious within the story. In fact, most of the Bhagavatam allegories and analogies are pretty straightforward. Like when they talk about the city of the nine gates, you know, it's very obvious they're talking about the body. And they're not meant to be something, you know, hidden particularly, although there are things that are, you know, rajaguhyam, confidential knowledge that are within the scriptures, more, you know, it's confidential for the devotees to understand. But still, this is pretty plain. Gajendra's in the water, he's in great danger, as we are in the material world. He has great power, he's the king, but it doesn't help him. He's still facing death. His family and friends couldn't help him. They tried, but not, in other words, there was no relief. There was no help for his distress. It's also said, even in one of the verses, it says, it's in the verse, the crocodile is called the crocodile of time. You know, so here, of course, time represents what? Death. In other words, we're all limited by so much time, and then we have to leave the body. So the crocodile of time, death is there, you know, at him. And Srila Prabhupada says in one purport that everyone should fear death because everyone is caught by the crocodile of eternal time and may die at any moment. So that's the reality of the material world. We know that. That's something we hear all the time. We've understood that, hopefully. Sometimes we don't totally, but I think at least theoretically we understand that, and we know that we have to get out of this material world. Another point is that Gajendra was strong on land, but he wasn't strong in the water. And in one pretty well-known purport in the 8th canto, Srila Prabhupada talks about how we must serve from a position of strength. In fact, this must have been a recent incident. Sometimes Prabhupada's, purports reflect something that's just happening, either a world event or something within the ISKCON society or devotees, because he talks about sannyasis falling down, which it, I think it just happened, that there were just some cases of that. And Prabhupada acted like, it wasn't like such a horrible thing. He just said, you have to act in a position of strength. You have to serve wherever you're stronger. And he talked about, if you're stronger in household life, then become a householder. If you're stronger in renounced life, then become renounced. So, his point was probably trying to encourage everybody by this incident that we see, this example of Gajendra, that in the water he wasn't strong, so he was not well situated. So we want to be well situated in a place that we can advance in Krishna consciousness. Obviously, Gajendra in great crisis surrenders, he calls to the Supreme Lord, and he's pulled from the water, you say the material, the material ocean, and ultimately goes back to Godhead. Another very important point in the story is that devotional service is never lost. Of course, there's so many verses around this, that in this loss, there's, in this process, there's no loss or diminution. That we're always protected from the greatest fears. So his past bhakti enabled him to remember the Lord. And then after he remembered the Lord, he was given more remembrance, and he remembered all these beautiful prayers. Chapter 3, the entire chapter 3 of the 8th canto is Gajendra's prayers. They're just very condensed here because this is just a mention of the incarnations. But wonderful prayers, full of insight, full of spiritual knowledge that he has, and understanding the position of Krishna, understanding the position of living entity, etc. Now, in this verse, in the 2nd canto, he gives four very important names of Krishna or Vishnu. He calls him Adi Purusha, which means the original enjoyer, obviously the Lord of Sacrifice, Akhila Lokanath, the Lord of the Universe, Lokanath, Lord of the Universe, Tirtha Shrava, famous as a place of pilgrimage, and Shravala Mangala Namadeya. He says, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy to be chanted. So Krishna is that first person, that Adi Purusha, or the original enjoyer. And the devotees understand that, so we offer everything to Krishna. That's bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is understanding the position of Krishna, understanding the nature of the Atma, and surrendering to Krishna, serving Krishna, offering everything to him. And Gajendra exhibited that. All he had was a flower. He offers the flower, but then he also offered prayers and glorification, which is something we can always do, which Krishna very much appreciates, when he is praised, glorified by his holy names and by his activities, by his attributes, by his qualities, when he's philosophically described, all of these things. So he's also Tirtha Shrava, a place of pilgrimage. It's interesting now in the purport, Prabhupada said there's no real need to visit pilgrimage sites because one can simply chant at any place. Since Krishna and his holy name, be non-different from him, are completely purifying, they actually purify Tirthas themselves, his presence. So why is it no real need? Just stay at home and chant Hare Krishna. So why do devotees always want to go to India or go to Vrindavan or go to Mayapur, like that? Well, it's not that the devotees need purification, but the Tirtha serve as inspiration, right? They serve as their impetus to remember Krishna's devotees. They feel, just in that presence, they often will feel more the presence of Krishna. They'll be often surrounded by many devotees, advanced devotees. They get that association of advanced devotees. And they are remembering Krishna's pastimes. So it's an impetus. It helps us to become enthusiastic. Prabhupada would say it like recharges us, kind of like recharging the batteries when you sometimes go to India and visit these holy places. But to become advanced, to become purified, Prabhupada is saying it's not really necessary because we have the holy name. We have Krishna that we can access anywhere and any time. So he said, it is concluded, therefore, that the holy name of the Lord and topics in relation with him are always worth hearing, and therefore he's called here in this verse Namadeya, or one whose holy name is worth chanting. So enacting these pastimes, the Shravamangala Namadeya, so the devotees can hear and chant about them. They attract devotees to Krishna in all forms and incarnations. And Prabhupada talks about this, that one of the main reasons that Krishna comes in all of his incarnations, including when he comes in his own personal form as Krishna, is to attract the hearts and the minds of the devotees. And he says, to give us things to talk about, things to read about. It gives us, you know, it's very hard to just... I don't know how impersonalists do it, actually. I don't think they really do anymore in this age. You know, but theoretically, just sort of like negate everything. Think that everything's nothing and I'm spirit. I'm pure spirit. Try meditating on that for 24 hours a day. Yes, I'm spirit. I mean, my mind would be off somewhere else in about 30 seconds. I don't know about the rest of you. But no, we need subject matter. We need topics. The natural propensity of the living entity is to hear, to chant, to glorify, and particularly, of course, in our purified spiritual state, to hear, chant, remember about Krishna and his divine pastimes in all of his different incarnations, and of course, particularly as Krishna, but in all of the, and that's why we've seen this whole list of incarnations, you know, that different devotees are attracted to. Of course, we're all attracted to basically all of the incarnations of Krishna. They all have some attractive quality. You know, but some devotees might be more specifically, like they're devotees of Ramachandra, devotees of Nrsingadeva, whichever. So Krishna does these. He enacts these pastimes, you know, for our benefit, to know him, to hear about him, to remember him. And of course, Krishna or Narayan is Akhila Lokanath, the Lord of the universe. And Prabhupada says here, he's also the Lord of Gajendra, who as a great devotee is worthy of being protected. So I wanted to speak mostly, I guess, about that topic because there's so many topics here, I can't cover them all. But I thought that, because that's what we think of often with Gajendra, is the Lord's protection of him. So I just want to talk about that a little bit. Prabhupada said, the Lord is the protector of everyone in this purport, but he's first protector of one who acknowledges the superiority of the Lord instead of being falsely proud to deny the superiority of the Lord or claim to be equal to him. Therefore, a pure devotee is given first preference because of his full dependence. So that's very important. Krishna does protect his devotees. He gives that guarantee. He says, you know, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, do not fear, I will offer protection. Many, many places he says this. Because the world is a dangerous place, and everyone is beset by miseries, and ultimately death is coming. And generally, it's a fearful place. This bhaya, or fearfulness, is there. And in fact, when they talk about the four miseries of birth, death, old... No, is that right? And I'm just trying to think, though, when Prabhupada uses the word fearfulness for... For defending, yes. The propensities, thank you. Glad I got you here. The propensities that are there of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, Prabhupada sometimes said defending, says fearing abhaya. And of course the devotee is abhaya, that's his name, Abhayacharan. So that's there, that's part of this world. Now, so what do we do? In times of difficulty, a devotee depends on Krishna and seeks his protection. That's one of the main lessons here. Now, we use our intelligence. We don't stand out in the busy road out on 235 and just kind of like expect Krishna to protect us from all the cars. They're not going to hit me because I'm depending on Krishna. Prabhupada gave an example. He said that we use our intelligence. We don't say, oh, tiger, come and eat me. I'm protected by Krishna. No, you know, that's like foolish. But ultimately, whatever we do, however we apply our intelligence, however careful we are, there's no guarantee in this material world. And therefore, only ultimately can Krishna protect us. Prabhupada would talk about this a lot. He would say, some people with the very best of medicine, very best doctors in the world, they can't be saved. And some people are saved under very difficult circumstances that no one would expect. So that's where it's up to Krishna and Krishna's ability to protect us or not. Now also, we understand that this principle is a very important one in Krishna consciousness. In fact, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, talks about the six qualities of surrender. And that's quoted in Majjalila 22.100. It says, the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, knowing Krishna as maintainer, full self-surrender, completely depending on the Lord, and humility. So those are principles, and they're not only just principles, but they're also symptoms or signs that we can see that somebody is very surrendered to the Lord. So one who is very surrendered expects Krishna's protection. Doesn't necessarily demand it, but just expects, of course, Krishna will protect me. You know, Krishna will maintain me. I don't have to endeavor even so much because that protection and maintenance will be there by the Lord. And one feels under the personal protection and guidance of Krishna. It's not just an abstract thing, but one fully surrendering to Krishna will understand and will feel that presence. And will see, feel the super soul giving guidance and knowledge and protection. Yeah. So, Srila Prabhupada said in a purport here in the 8th canto, situated in everyone's heart, Krishna deals differently according to the living entity's position. The living entity's position is to be under the protection of the illusory energy or under Krishna's personal protection. When the living entity is fully surrendered, he is under the direct protection of Krishna, and Krishna gives him all intelligence by which he can advance in spiritual realization. Of course, one is spiritually realized, they understand the soul is different than the body that we're in, and that realization brings about an increase in one's fearlessness. In other words, a devotee is really less fearful about the material world because understanding clearly that we are the Atma, the Jiva, that is within this, encaged in this body. In 3:26:16 says, the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is felt in the time factor, which causes fear of death due to false ego of the deluded soul who's contacted material nature. So again, it's false ego. False ego is what our false identification with the body, thinking we are this body, is really the source of fearfulness in this material world. And if we completely knew and realized we weren't the body, there would be very little fear of death particularly. But it's natural that we do have this feeling. It's natural that people want to avoid death. I mean, and that is natural because the desire for immortality is there because we are, because the soul is eternal. Our natural propensity is to be eternal, and therefore it is a, what is it? It's a very sort of inappropriate, rude awakening that no, we in this material world, we're not immortal. In other words, when we have to suffer through birth, death, disease, and old age in this material world, it is really against our nature. It is against our spiritual nature, and therefore it never feels right. We're not comfortable with it. So Krishna is known as Amrita. He is deathless, and his devotee is also Amrita. And this deathless, here's a nice verse from 2:6:19. That was actually this last chapter. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the three high planetary systems and beyond the material coverings. And Prabhupada says, the transcendental nature is described as Amrita. It's described in the Vedas, the immortal Lord is the Lord of immortality. If the Lord is immortal, and because he is the Lord of immortality, he can award immortality to his devotees. So that is the point. We're in an unnatural situation in this material world where we are mortal. At least the body is mortal. Because our natural situation is the situation of immortality. But Prabhupada says, in one birth, one should rectify everything and come to permanent life. This is Krishna consciousness. In other words, we can change the situation by getting out of this material world. Now, I think one question sometimes comes up. Is, should a devotee pray to Krishna to protect them, to save them? Does a devotee always turn to Krishna in times of danger? Yesterday, we heard this wonderful example of Prahlad Maharaj, right? And he dealt with unimaginable adversity. His father was trying to kill him when he was a five-year-old child, but his faith never wavered, and Krishna always protected him. In fact, to the point where he eventually comes his Lord Nrsingadev and kills Hiranyakasipu, his demoniac father, and saves him. But the interesting thing is that Prahlad Maharaj, being an incredibly highly, highly advanced devotee, never directly asks for help, does he? He just, talking about this yesterday, he just chanted and stayed dependent upon Krishna, whatever Krishna wants. I am Krishna's completely surrendered servant. And he actually just demonstrated the symptoms of surrender, to be fully dependent on the Lord and just to expect that protection. Now, it's interesting, as someone, I mean, I think in the questioning yesterday, someone was asking, well, why did he have to go through so many things? He got tried to be killed in so many different ways before it come. And I think that Dharmaraj gave a nice answer. He said, Krishna will protect, but he may not always be on our time schedule, right? It may not be exactly when we expect or how we expect it. In other words, we don't dictate how Krishna, okay, now you have to do this, this, and this, Krishna. This is how you have to protect me. No. No, we surrender to Krishna, and it's always a mystery how he's going to protect. You know, but it happens. But he does. So most of us aren't advanced as Prahlad Maharaj, and it's very natural to want to preserve the body. And that's a natural thing. In fact, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur talks about it in his purport to, you know, the Anya Bilasi Dasyunu verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. And, you know, he says that this attachment to the body, or this, even for an advanced devotee, it's so prevalent, it's so deeply rooted by nature that it's natural in time of danger that one will, you know, try to save one's body. It's really kind of natural. When you're in a body, you cannot but help with that. But he said, but that's not the devotee's real nature, and we quickly realized that's not his real nature to try to just protect this body. But the point is, we turn to Krishna. We turn to Krishna for that protection. And that is never bad. That will always help us. This is a purport Srila Prabhupada wrote in 8233 in the chapter on Gajendra. He says, no one can say, I do not fear death. This is a false proposition. Everyone fears death. However, one who seeks shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be saved from death. One may argue, doesn't the devotee die? The answer is that yes, the devotee certainly must give up his body, but the body is material. The difference, however, that for one who surrenders to Krishna fully and is protected by Krishna, the present body is his last. He will not again receive a material body subjected to death. So that's the wonderful thing. Yes, we do have to give up this body, but if we're a fully surrendered devotee, Prabhupada is saying it'll be the last time. It'll be the last body that has to be given up in that way. So how do we look at difficulties, danger, trials, tribulations? Ideally, if one is advanced, a devotee sees dangers or problems or difficulties as an opportunity to surrender and to remember Krishna. We may or may not always understand why Krishna has put us in a particular situation. Of course, for a devotee, nothing is accidental. Krishna is arranging everything for our benefit. But we may not even know exactly what that benefit is at the time. Sometimes later, we realize it. But we do know that if we simply take that as an opportunity to surrender to Krishna and try to remember Krishna, then we will make great advancement and we certainly will be protected. By being put into stress, it helps us. Sometimes Krishna does that to increase the devotee's love. Prabhupada says, when a devotee is in danger, he thinks, now Krishna has appeared before me as danger. God is never dangerous to a devotee, but the devotee is never afraid of dangers because he is confident that the danger is but another feature of God. Why should I be afraid? The devotee thinks, I am surrendered to him. Therefore, Kunti Devi says, Vipada Santu, let all these calamities happen again and again. Because she knows how to remember Krishna at times of danger, she welcomes it. My dear Lord, I welcome dangers because by dangers come I can remember you. I am not advocating that we all go out and start praying for Krishna to put us in danger, you know, because most of us are not on the level of Queen Kunti. But nevertheless, when we are put in danger and distress, and it will come in this material world, in this material life, for every one of us, there will be some difficulties, there will be some distress, there will be some problems. Those are opportunities for us to know, now I have to really, really go within, dig deep, as they say, and pray to Krishna, remember Krishna, try to always have Krishna in our heart, and expecting his protection. That whatever happens will be best, and it's up to him. So, Bhagavad Gita says, one who is not connected with the Supreme can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be happiness without peace? So we have to stay connected or we'll never be peaceful, no matter if dangers, no dangers, whatever. And of course, his final instruction, Sarva Dharma Pritya Masucha, do not fear. Final thing, I just want to mention about spiritual protection. Of course, Gajendra was saved, his body was saved. He was not killed by the crocodile. Now, we may or may not be always protected. As Prabhupada said, yes, eventually everyone has to leave the body. But what we really want is spiritual protection, that our spiritual advancement will continue, that our remembrance of Krishna will continue, right? You know, that we'll always be advancing in Krishna consciousness. And as, of course, it's quoted, what Padma Purana says, what's the principal rule? And Rupa Goswami quotes it before he gives all of his list of 64 do's and don'ts. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That's the principal rule, and that's, you know, what we want to be able to do. So Krishna also protects without our asking. And that is, of course, spiritual protection. And Krishna helps us to advance in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes whether we want to or don't want to. Sometimes almost against our sort of our mundane will. But because we are a devotee, Krishna continues to pull and push and prod us along to make spiritual advancement. This is, of course, a really nice verse I like. It's quoted in Majjha 22, 39, 42. I think it's somewhere else, too, but maybe not. Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service, at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he's very, very foolish. Indeed, he is just like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires. When someone engages in Lord Krishna's devotional service for the satisfaction of the senses and instead acquires a taste for serving Krishna, he gives up all material desires and willingly offers himself as eternal servant of Krishna. So we can see that was Gajendra's position. He was there enjoying as an elephant in the waters, kind of forgotten Krishna, but put in that danger. Krishna forced him into a situation where he had to surrender, he had to turn to Krishna, he had to pray to him, and therefore he was completely saved, he was completely freed of all material desire, he was completely purified and was able to go back home, back to Godhead. So I think there's so many lessons we can get from the story of Gajendra. Actually, there's one more verse about Gajendra tomorrow. I'll continue the discussion. So, thank you so much. All praise to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions or thoughts, comments?
You mentioned, excuse me, nice class, Prabhu, thank you. You mentioned about how the Mayavadis are very much, the philosophy is very dry, and many times their audience also understands that it's dry. So what the Mayavadi does is then he turns around and he goes, starts commenting on Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore he has big pandals and attracts so many people and goes to the 10th canto to talk about Krishna. But because otherwise they can't get the attracts, like you said, it's neti, neti, neti. It doesn't go anywhere.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point. In fact, of course, what they do, they manage to give an impersonal interpretation somehow to Krishna's pastimes. I don't know how. But I guess you can do that yourself. You can become Krishna or whatever it is. And they particularly, for some reason, even though they're so totally detached, they often like to focus on the chapters about the gopis and the rasa dance, right? You know, in their very detached way. Okay. Miles? Any other questions or comments? I was going to give 10 more seconds. You just got in.
Also, is that you have it where Gajendra, yeah, he finally remembered Vishnu after how many years?
Well, it was 1,000 years in the fighting with the crocodile.
So because we have such short lives, Krishna can remind us of him very quickly if we are in danger.
Yeah.
So that's also the benediction why the demigods want to take birth within human families on this planet, because then that much quicker we can get back. Instead of dabbling for 1,000 years.
Yeah, not only is it quicker on the Earth planet than in the heavenly planets, in a sense, but it's also, one place, Prabhupada said, in the heavenly planets, the demigods go along for their however many celestial years, and everything's fine. They're fairly young, they're healthy, and then all of a sudden death comes. It's almost like without warning, because they don't have really old age and disease like that. So actually, for us, that old age and disease becomes an impetus for us to remember Krishna and to become Krishna consciousness. It's almost a benediction because we get some warning, right? All of those that you're my age, you agree? We certainly get a warning. Thank you. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.